Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Yesterday, Christmas Day, also marked this month's Mini Moon Day. Let's pay homage with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, coincidence or something more or less?
Let's go with the something less. While it's fun to consider these sorts of things as having some meaning outside of just their coincidence, there really isn't anything that we can point to, except that I'm speaking particularly in reference to the overuse, in my humble opinion, of the term supermoon, describing when a moon appears larger in the sky than it normally would appear, yet ascribing a significance to that really is beyond measure.
It's an optical delusion.
The effect actually does happen. The moon is larger and does appear brighter, but how do you actually recognize that? How do you measure that difference? And is it really that much significantly different from the moon at perigee, closeness to Earth, in any month? Because if we actually look at what happens with the cycles of the moon, we find that the moon has a close approach to Earth every month and a distant point from Earth every month, which is what happens to be yesterday when the moon was at its greatest distance from the Earth for the month apogee. So I wonder if any folks out observing the moon last night noticed that it was smaller than usual. A mini moon, let's say.
A ball bearing.
Barely visible to the eye. I don't think so, because we have nothing against which to measure it. And the other thing that we can add to this is that if you really do like to see the moon looking very, very large, it's a very simple thing to do. If you observe full moon as it's rising on the horizon or setting in the dawn sky the day after, you can easily get that illusion that you spoke of before when the moon is seen next to objects of known size, a well-known illusion. Not well understood, but a well-known illusion.
Derek, let's hearken back 48 years ago. On this day, three astronauts were returning to Earth from the first time having circumvented the moon.
Yes, I really love this story, Dave, because it indicates a couple of things. The determination of America at that time to press forward with the Apollo program of taking astronauts to the moon, taking humans to the moon for the first time, so much so that not even the Christmas holiday was an impediment to the progress necessary. But I also really enjoy this because of the fact that the iconic image of the Earth that we all know from the moon, of the Earth rising above the lunar horizon, was taken by one of the astronauts on this mission. It was Bill Anders. Bill Anders was along with Jim Lovell and Frank Borman on this trip around the moon. They did 10 orbits. They were at the moon on Christmas Eve and then headed back home to Earth to land on December 27th. The most interesting aspect, I think, about this crew is that Lovell and Borman were experienced astronauts, and for Bill Anders, this was his only flight, his only space flight, was a flight to the moon. Can there be a better Christmas present?
Anders and his cohort were also obviously the first to directly view the dark side of the moon. Did it appear dark to them?
That's a really great question because we use that term so loosely. Well, no, the moon's opposite side is not dark. Now, let's separate this from the nighttime side of the moon. So there is a nighttime side of the moon, of course, because when one side of the moon is facing the sun, of course, the opposite side has to be dark. And so the night can last 2 weeks. So when we're thinking about the rotation of the moon, there is the nighttime side of the moon. But that idea, the colloquial side of the dark side of the moon, well, that harkens from our thinking that as we look to the moon, we always see the same face of the moon. And of course, there's the iconic Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon, that helps to reinforce this.
Derek, there's this never substantiated rumor that Pink Floyd followed that hit up with an album called Water at Ceres.
Yes, I don't quite remember that album, but I'm sure it would be a revealing one, considering that we're now really clearly understanding that there's quite a bit of water at Ceres also. It's said that 30% of the mass of this largest of the asteroids in our solar system between the orbit of Mars and Jupiter is made of water.
Now, 30%.
30% of the mass of the asteroid is water. Now, the water is frozen beneath the surface, and one of the things that researchers have been able to identify about this is that it seems as if it has been possible for water to exist, frozen just beneath the surface, no more than a meter below the surface, for billions of years. We've also been able to see outcroppings of this ice on the surface, and there have also been geysers of water, mist, and vapor out through this crust that clearly indicate that there is water there. Some even speculate the possibility of a liquid ocean beneath the surface. Water is much more prominent in our solar system than we ever thought before.
And perhaps in solar systems beyond ours.
More to be discovered.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.